Thanks.
And good morning, everybody. It's 9:03 a.m. and today is the Administration and Operations Committee meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board of the Employees Retirement System. Jen, can I have a roll call, please?
Sure. Ms. King? Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
And Ms. Sala?
Here.
Quorum.
Okay, today we only have one agenda item, which is the approval of the draft ERS 2020 city budget request. Jerry, are you presenting this?
Well, I'll tee it off. So in the file, we have the normal annual memo from our chief financial officer, Daniel Bopalin, who has prepared this, and he's outlined the significant items in the memo, and then, of course, it's followed by the budget summary schedules. And actually, we can proceed as you prefer. We can go through this line by line, or we can just simply take questions because everybody's had it in advance, whichever you prefer to do.
Well, there's not a lot, so should we just go line by line?
Yeah, okay. So Dan will take us, you'll take us through line by line, Dan?
Yes, this is Dan Bopalin. I'm the Chief Financial Officer. We'll start with the salaries. The salaries increased by about $28,000. Most of that was due to a couple of reclasses that we have. I did build in the 3% raises just in case they occur in 2022. That's usually budgeted by the city's budget office.
Dan, can I make a comment here?
Yep.
Madam Chairman, just for everybody's information, we've been told recently by DER, Melody attended the HR officer conference on Friday, that the amounts that were budgeted for 2021 are not going to be likely, given. So, I mean, that's the latest update. So this 3% is just it's a contingent item, but we don't expect to see it for 21. We're not sure what will happen yet, obviously, for 22.
May I speak, Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Just an FYI, and it's tough for me today because I'm the analyst sitting on the board, but in common practices, we normally don't increase it 3%, including in the budget. We don't project unless it has been passed by the budget office and the mayor for such increases, but we could leave that in for now, as we go through the budget process.
I think what you're saying, Molly, if I understand you correctly, is that the budget hasn't yet been submitted to the mayor, and of course, obviously not to the council. That doesn't happen until next fall, and it's never really final until November. Our budgeting effort is preliminary, like all the other departments, just kind of goes into the overall administration plan. So this is all preliminary estimates anyway.
Yeah.
And when I prepare the city budget, I use the current salary numbers. I just, for the board, I put in the increase just in, as Jerry said, just on a contingent basis. All right. Any other questions about the salaries?
Madam Chair, Mr. Klusman. Isn't that what we use in our actuarial? I know we tell Larry to use some kind of a salary projection, don't we, every year? And we have a CPI also that we, it's like 2.5 now?
Yeah, so they use our actual salaries, and then they project a salary increase. I believe it's like the salary inflation rate, it's like 2.5%.
Okay.
Well, actually, Tom, what happens here is Dan's right. They take a measurement at 12/31, and we send the data over in January, third week of January. So then there's an assumed rate of wage escalation. And if you go in the evaluation, it's different for each group, okay? And then it averages out. I mean, it's different for police and fire and general city, but it's based on the board's assumption, just as you said. And also, there's an inflation factor, but there's a salary escalation rate that's determined by the board every 5 years. The last time we did it was like for 2018, so that still holds constant. But that really has nothing to do with the city's year-by-year budget proposal. In this case, the 3% that was approved last year. Those are independent items.
Okay. And then my next question is, and you can tell me if I, you know, I'm overreaching here or whatever, but I know that usually in government bonus type programs are few and far between, but I know the federal government has a rather elaborate and very good bonus program where they have discretionary bonuses that they can award to employees. And with our, I won't go back over all our talk about how our staff is underpaid because of the city ordinance on nobody making more than the mayor, but if we build in things like this to the budget, and then the council, when they decide on increases, and if they do or don't do anything, when we usually have money left over in our budget, what would be the appetite of you, Jerry, and your staff to try to put together some proposal where we would have the ability to give bonuses because all the good work that goes on by our staff all the time, it gets recognized to a point, but it would be nice to give them something tangible, and that would fall outside, I believe, of the base salary requirement with the mayor, because a lot of people make more than the mayor. If you look at the Journal Sentinel published of the city wages with other things. So is there any appetite to try to get some proposal where within management we could give bonuses to good work that goes on by our staff?
Well, first of all, it's very thoughtful of you, Tom, and I'm sure that the staff people appreciate your thoughtfulness on that. In the discussions we've had over time with the lawyers, you're quite correct. The salary ordinance controls the salaries, and from a budget standpoint, the salary item is completely separate from all the other budget items. So we, in the past, we've run surpluses in our budget pretty much every year, but those amounts are by ordinance separate from compensation. So what I've been told, and I've read this myself in the salary ordinance, one of the first paragraphs in there says that basically no city employee can receive any emolument, any form of compensation, any other than that is provided in the salary ordinance, right? So, and you're also right that there are people, when you look at the Journal Sentinel report, for example, the chief, the former Chief Morales made $149,000, for example, right? And the mayor's pay is only $147,000. So, what that represents is some special pays that are provided for, for that particular pay position. I think they were, I forget, you know more as a police officer what those special pays are, but they apply to police officers. And there's also the sick leave incentive that the general city people get, for example, and that regularly affects the somebody's pay. But other than, and those are provided for in the ordinance as well, in their tab 50, I believe. So again, the lawyers keep telling us that we're restricted. We can't give anybody so much as a stick of gum beyond what's provided in the salary ordinance. But that's a nice thought. So you're right, there's no bonus programs.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing. I think we're stuck to the salary ordinance, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to add to that. The reason why
it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. The reason why, I think, because first aid statutes state that the police chiefs can make decisions that are interested in the city as a whole and protecting the city. And that means his budget can go over. So that's the only reason why the police department, as you can notice, their salary over time is higher than the mayor's salary. But that's an anomaly. No, the department is able to do so.
Well, overtime is provided for in the labor contracts and the salary ordinance, so that's the exception that's already covered by the law. So I guess the short answer is we'd have to go back to the council and get them to approve some kind of a bonus structure. We tried that before, but every time we try it, we are told that the mayor will not agree to it. It'll be vetoed. And so I've been back to that well three times with no success. And I think it's one of our risk factors, no question about it.
Okay. Well, if I can come across some of the, I know like the WRS incentivizes their investment team, which, you know, is successful. And maybe if I can get my hands on that federal program, and then I could like forward it to you to look at and see if there's some thing in there that we could maybe use to get it, you know, because if the federal government's doing it and they've already vetted it all out, maybe that would be helpful to give it some ability that we didn't just make this up, you know?
Right. And so the other thing the board could do in that regard, that federal thing would be like one data point in a broader salary survey. There could be a salary survey that indicate. We did this in the past, and it's been a long time. I'm not sure you were on the board when we did them. I think the last one was done in 2011. Maybe that was the first year you came on the board. Mm-hmm. And so there are firms that do this, and it indicated at that time that just what you said earlier. So that could be refreshed and taken to the council, and we'll see what their appetite is for doing that. But it is one of the risk factors, right? The return on this plan greatly affects the cost of the city. So 1% difference, as you know, means tens of millions of dollars every year in additional city contributions. If it's more or less than our bogey 7.5 from. So it's a big number.
Yeah, maybe if we even let them tie it into as long as we exceed, we could do it as long as we have budget money left over and say we exceeded our expected rate of return or some caveat so they wouldn't think that we're throwing away money would be nice, but it would be good to have that ability because it incentivizes better work and a lot of people deserve to be recognized. And like when you present us at the meetings with those customer satisfaction surveys and they're all so high and we just take them and file them and thank the people, but you know, they do come to work for compensation, and we ain't gonna give anybody a Maserati or anything, but you know, some token.
Thanks for the thought.
All right.
Very much appreciated.
Okay, sorry to drag that down so
okay.
far. Okay, thanks.
Okay, the next item is the fringe benefits. This is based on the gross fringe benefit rate set by the budget office. It's 46% for 2022.
Yeah, so I have a comment about this that I'd like to make. Well, Tom, last year, you know, we had a long discussion both at the ANO and then later at the board meeting about the fringe rate, and you made an excellent point that, you know, on the healthcare, that that healthcare cost is not related in any way to salary, and they're two independent things, right? And of course, the fringe rate, the healthcare costs are allocated by department both based on salary. So we took that to heart, and again, this is only a budget, right? And we don't really even know what the premium that the city is going to charge for 2022, because they haven't been determined yet. So we have to make a forecast based on something, and so we're using the fringe rate. So we went back and we looked, 2020 has now been closed out. So we looked at the 2020 budget for healthcare versus what was forecast for healthcare and the fringe rate, and they were pretty much comparable. They were within $10,000 of the budget forecast. So, you know, since we're making this, you know, like more than 20 months before the close of the period, it's pretty good. It worked out pretty good. So, and we are sensitive to that. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Well, good. Thanks for following up on that, not just leaving it, you know, die over there, because that really helps with the, you know, the question that was lingering, at least in my mind, as to how accurate that might be. So it's great that you did an actual look at it. And because we, like you said, we don't know what people, you know, somebody might have a kid and then go to a family plan, you know, an employee we have go from 1+1 to full family or who knows what, but it's great that you did that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, moving on to the operating expenditures. The general office expense went up by about $18,000. Mostly having to do with increase in postage and mailing numbers. Excuse me, someone's calling my home phone. The next item is the other operating supplies. Having to do with mostly just laptops and other computer related items. That's going to stay the same. Facility rent and property services, that went down $46,000. Most of that reduction is due to a reduced amount of common area maintenance costs that our landlord charges us. And that would be like for property taxes, any other type of maintenance on any common area that they charge us.
Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
Dan, this is primarily for the rental of the facility we have right now, basically.
Yep.
And any costs associated with renting that facility, that's it. No other facilities included there.
There's our 789 water, our normal office, our remote office, and we also rent some space for our backup servers in Madison.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. The next item is the equipment rental. This is mostly just our copy machines and things like that. That only just increased by $2,000. The next item, professional services. This is where we have our biggest increase. Most of this increase is associated with increase in projected investment manager fees. Just based on our asset levels, we expect to have a higher cost for investment managers. Next item is IT services. That went down $274,000. Most of this decrease is due to where we are in our software renewal cycle and our infrastructure maintenance cycle. Those are multi-year cycles, so our IT costs will go up and down from year to year. So that's the main reason why it was reduced in 2022. Our other operating services, I added back some training costs, because I'm hoping that we will be able to do more training in 2022. And there's also a budgeted increase for cyber insurance as well, because we had that one claim in 2020, so I expect our cyber insurance to go up. And finally, our equipment went down by $277,000. This is mostly due to where we are on our IT infrastructure replacement cycle. It's like we're gonna do some upgrades to FileNet software. Jeff Schober would know more about that than me. That's pretty much it. Overall, our budget is going to be increased by about $1.2 million. So, anyone has any questions for me or anything else?
Madam Chair, Mr. Klusman?
Go ahead.
Yeah, just on the largest item, the professional fees, correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, some of our professional fees are fixed, like, I'm sure, like, the actuary and some of the auditors are fixed, but the professional fees, then we also have our investment manager fees that are, many are tied to earnings. So is this increase based on better earnings? So it's costing us more because some managers are doing better now, and so we're paying out higher fees, or are these an increase in some of the fixed fee people?
It's an increase in investment managers just because a lot of our managers, they're based on the assets under management. So we have more assets under management, so there'll be more cost involved.
So on a budget like we're looking at to the layperson, that increase on that line is a good thing.
That's right. It's really what you said. There was good performance, so the asset values were up. And David, of course, forecasts in detail manager by manager. David, do you have any comment on that?
Well, I'll defer Eric. If you were a little closer to it, I'll give you a chance to comment.
Sure.
On what drives that? That's a good question.
Thanks, David. Yeah, Mr. Klusman, it's really kind of a combination of both things you said. So there's the fact that we're projecting, that the fund will be worth more money. So that's just for the managers that have a fixed fee that's a percentage of their assets. You know, those fees are higher just because the asset base is higher. And then we do have, one manager in particular, our DFA small cap value, that is able to earn a performance fee. And, they're off to such a good start this year that we really have to budget for them actually earning a higher performance fee than they have in past budgets. So that's driving a portion of that as well. So it's a combination of higher asset values, fixed fees on those higher asset values, and then potentially good performance for managers that are able to earn a performance fee. So as you said, if it does come in to where we're projecting, it'll be a good story of more assets and investment managers that have outperformed their benchmarks.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
That answers my question as well. Anyone else have any questions? Yes, no?
I mean, just the only thing I have, and I think, I don't know if this is normally provided to the board necessarily, and it's because of the jump, this is why I'm asking this, and the other operating services, this looks like it's a bucket just to put other stuff in there, so it was the actual we incur in 2020 was $518,000. But our budget is about 1.1 in 2021 and projected to be 1.2. Maybe getting an idea of what's in that bucket might help to know, how much is cybersecurity? Was that not budgeted in 2020, for example? Might help a little bit get some clarity, because it just looks like it's not just one particular item, several items are in there. Just a suggestion.
And what makes up that bucket? We have our board training expenses, our due diligence, our fiduciary insurance, some printing services, our staff training, and temporary services. The increases are mostly $20,000 for an increase in cyber insurance, and cut our 2021 staff training budget from $100,000 to $59,000 in 2021. So we put it back up to $100,000 in 2022. So those are the two main drivers of that increase. And as part of our budgeted other operating services, we also include a buffer for our deductible on the fiduciary insurance. So that's why you see such a big difference between the actuals and the amounts we have budgeted. That makes sense to you.
Can you say that last part again, Dan?
So, we budget our, we have a $500,000 deductible for our fiduciary insurance. So we have that budgeted into our other operating services. And that's why there's such a difference between the actual expenses and the budgeted expenses.
Got it.
Basically, it's a placeholder in case we need to use that. And if we don't, it just stays within the fund. Got it?
Yes.
Do we have any other questions? No? Okay. So do I have a motion then to approve the draft of the 2022 city budget request?
I'll make a motion, Mr. Klusman.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Well, then I guess it's passed, so then I will move on to the board next week. Is that correct, Jerry?
Right. There's no other business to come before the meeting. You can adjourn if you like.
Yeah, with no other business, we can. Do we need a motion for adjourn?
You can just do that. You can just state that, Madam Chairman.
Did we go through the, just curious, did we go through the non-ERS estimate, or that's just FYI?
The non-trust, you mean?
Yeah, non-trust,
yeah. Yeah. Well, that, of course, is, those are items that are built to the city. So you don't really have to approve that, but we can certainly talk about them. The first item is the PABF, that's the old police plan. Those are officers that were actually all hired before I was born. I believe you had to be on the police force in 1948, which is a long time ago. And I believe, Dan, how many members we have left? How many left?
We have 8 survivors remaining. Last original member passed away in 2020.
Okay. Okay, so the reason there's an item on this is the city is now in a kind of a pay-as-you-go mode, and so it's because the assets have been ultimately depleted, and so they every year contribute the amount necessary to pay the benefits. It's relatively a diminishing amount, and so that's what that is. Also, the recognition, I mean, no one likes to be forgotten. But there's no COLA for the PABF to recognize of their loyal service for many years. The city awards a additional supplement every year. Many of these beneficiaries are poor widows, and so they give them a small increase every year. That's the $10,000 we put in there. And then the contribution is estimated. This is just a raw estimate at this point. And it's estimated at $79 million based on his contribution policy.
Jerry, we have not estimated it because we're waiting for the actuarial valuation.
Right, it's right. It's in the schedule from the valuation thing. From that out, Daniel. Group life insurance premium. Again, it's a city item that that we administer. So it's at least an estimate. And then the retirees benefit adjustment fund. Why don't you explain a little bit about that, Dan? Because I don't think trustees are necessarily familiar with it.
Yeah, so I believe that this relates to our firemen's annuity benefit fund, which is similar to the PPAF. This is for the fire, for the fighters. It's the old legacy planning for them.
Right. There's that's covered by an annuity contract, but an adjustment to it annually that we have to budget for. Again, the city pays those costs.
I think the average age of those folks are in their 90s, right, Dan? Am I right?
Yes. Yep. I think the youngest person in the PBAF is 87 years old.
Yeah, so the message there is these plants have a very long tail on them. And so God bless them, they made that long. So those items for the non-trust items, and they are given to not pay for. So if that's all we had, I guess.
Okay. Molly, did you have any other questions about that, or
No, I was just curious. I believe the city obviously will pay what the actuary recommends, and I think around that 79 estimate is. So I think it's around that 79 million. I'm going to guess. So.
Right. Yep. Okay. Well, with no other business before us, this meeting is adjourned.
Just say the time, Ms. Sala.
Oh, 9:34.
Thanks.